Stephen, have you ever gone to any of those Marianne Williamson lectures?
No. What's that about?
Well, I guess she, you know, she preaches on the Course in Miracles.
Oh.
Well, it's no wonder that, you know, she's doing it and successful. The level of suffering when the mind sort of has you, when you're fully convinced you're human and things are not going your way, and, you know, the recording you played at the beginning of this is a good example of that. It's like desperate, like just desperate to hold on to anything.
Yeah.
And you seem to be the object of that particular individual's desperation.
Yeah.
And I can understand that. I mean, I can find it in myself.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
How desperate I am at times. And the level of suffering and not okayness is pretty astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
You're a creature.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And I think we get here to look and see, you know, what else might be here, like to talk about maybe what else might be here. And it's almost like it's not even on the same plane. It's not on the same playing field whatsoever. So it doesn't really translate.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's right. I mean, we turn to, may I say, superficial inspirations to try to ameliorate existential discomfort. We want to make our, you know, thinking right, or our experience correct, or our behavior, our orientation correct. So we practice mindfulness and gratitude and surrender and prayer and rituals of a million kinds, you know, repetitive mantra chanting, throwing, you know, wood into the fire and going swaha. We'll do anything to placate, you know, placate the gods. We're going to save the world through mantra chanting. Who knows? Maybe it works. Maybe if enough people did mantra chanting, it would actually work. It's hard to know.
Did you watch Marianne on Batgap? I noticed she was on Batgap.
No.
Brand new. I just popped up on YouTube.
Yeah. I don't think I could stand it for very long.
Probably not, no.
Well, it's all just so preachy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's like you get preached at because she's aiming to resolve existential angst through inspirational, inspirational encouragement. You know, through the, let's say, Course in Miracles cosmology. And you're like, God, yikes, you know, shut the fuck up.
But has that morphed over the years for her at all, or is it?
I don't think all that much, you know. I mean, I think a lot of these kinds of speakers over the years tend to adopt the popular memes of the day that they pick up from whoever the, you know, popular publishers are. You know, so if someone comes out with a, you know, a big bestseller, then Marianne Williamson and Deepak Chopra and everyone else that speaks, you know, publicly for a living will, you know, jump on the bandwagon and promulgate those, you know, those memes because they're in the, you know, cultural consciousness. I mean, the new age, you know, cultural consciousness. Yeah. You know, we don't hear too much about, you know, the Earth School anymore.
Oh, from Gary Zukav?
Right.
He's talking about the Earth School.
Yeah, you know, like if you trace these things that have gone on for the last, you know, 3, 4, 5 or more decades, I mean, we're not talking about the shit that Madame Blavatsky used to talk about.
Yeah. I don't even have any idea what she talked about. But
yeah, you know, yeah. What? You know, I mean, the early psychobabble that was used to establish, the Theosophical Society.
Mm.
Yeah, so, I mean, where did that go? I mean, you don't hear many Krishnamurti memes anymore. Nobody talks about, the autobiography of a yogi guy. I mean, you know, some fuckers are still referencing Nirsagadatta and Ramana Maharshi because that plays.
Yeah, that place.
You know, that still has some legs. and of course, there's, you know, people all over the world that are still running the Islam tapes and the Christian tapes and the Jew tapes, right? They're still running those tapes as if those are, you know, oldies but goodies. It's got a beat and you can dance to it. It should all be on, American Bandstand.
the geeter with the heater.
Yeah. That's right. Right. Yeah, so, you know, we move from, like, you know, popular spiritual presentation to popular spiritual presentation. Nobody gets anywhere because there's no place to get. Nobody ever understands anything any more deeply because there's really nothing to understand. And deeply is for sure a myth.
Are you saying it could be different?
No. Not for them.
I thought there wasn't any them.
Mm-mm. Yeah, no, there's no them. There's only your experience. And you're, you know, always free to interpret it, feel it, articulate it, wonder about it, kvetch about it any way you want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you could say it's a really, it's a very funny presumption that's built into, all these various forms of, spiritual promulgation, right? Spiritual encouragement, spiritual promise, spiritual explanation. They're all based on the presumption that something is happening, has happened, and will happen. And if you follow the sniff test of what we're talking about, meaning them, then something better will happen to you. They're all based on a fundamental hysteria or a fundamental heresy, which is enrolling the imagination of the suffering human being into some kind of a comfort package that they can take, you know, on the road into the next moment so that they can start having more reliable spiritual experiences or more reliable gratitude and be, you know, not so fucked up if they get a, you know, weird phone call from their crazy mother. So you see all of those systems indulge in the myth of creature and the myth of time and the myth of implication and the myth of something is going to happen to you. And that's how we relate, you know, socially and spiritually and politically. Everyone
is under the... Does that change when your awareness changes?
The best way to answer that question is find out. Because otherwise, you know, you place me or somebody else in the position of having some kind of authoritative experience that could somehow benefit you.
Well, how do I know where I am and you are and what's
going on
anyway?
You don't, and nobody can.
Yeah.
Nobody knows where they are or where anybody else is. All you can rely on is the curious plasma of your own firsthand experience, and then interpret that as you will. Right?
I thought it was the interpretive aspect of things that created it.
Well, that's true. That it is. But you don't have anything else. I mean, you've either got What could you say? You've either got yourself drowning in interpretive mechanisms that attempt to justify your existential panic, or you have freedom from that. Really, and anyone else's experience, no matter how enlightened they may be or how they got there, is really not all that relevant to you, ever. And there's no point in even finishing I Am That, let alone reading it 8 times. You know, what?
Was it 8 times?
However many times people have read I Am That, you know, there's a lot of, some people really just, you know, they turn to it like you would turn to Gideon. You know, run through it again. So let's say enhance or encourage that vicarious experience. We don't know what our own experience is, why it is, how it is, where it is, whether it has any value, whether it's spiritual or not. So we live in absolute confusion by virtue of being, you know, virtually driven. So we'll turn to any Bible we can get our hands on to help us frame our experience. So I go to Nirsagadatta to try to figure out what my experience is. You know, I go to Gideon to do the same thing. I go to Marianne Williamson to do the same thing. I go to the Bill of Rights or the Constitution, you know. I go to the Senate floor for the same thing. and everyone therefore remains in a practical prison of their own demonstration, where we are imprisoned by our own imagination, seeking context, content, and verification from anybody else. Please, you know, it's like, please tell me what my experience is. Please tell me what my experience has been. Please tell me what my experience should be. As if, you know, listening to Marianne Williamson or anybody for that matter is gonna be valuable. It's just going to enroll.
It's more like, please help me fix this experience. It's not tell me what it is. It's just help me fix it because it hurts.
Okay. Well, then that's the same. That's another symptom of the same thing, right? I'm desperate for amelioration, orientation, validation, justification, and what to do to, you know, mitigate, let's say, suffering. And that's the loop of, you know, creature myth. I have an adversarial relationship with my own experience. Right? That's the basic human neurosis. We have an adversarial relationship with our own experience. We don't like it. I don't like my experience. I don't like the way I am, the way I'm feeling about it, what I do and don't do to try to self-soothe. I just don't like it. I don't like myself, but I can't tell myself that. I can't tell anybody else that. But I just don't like myself, and I'm just unhappy with experience. I'll go to the gym. I'll sell encyclopedias. I'll get lost in YouTube. I'll go to work. I'll tell my partner I love them. The last thing I'll ever say is, Jesus fucking Christ, I hate experience. I gotta like make money. I gotta bathe myself or brush my teeth. I gotta appear to be, you know, on top of current events. I have to be interesting. You know, I have to understand what non-duality means. Otherwise I get thrown out of a party. If Adi Shanti hasn't asked me to teach, I'm no good.
I want to get that on a t-shirt.
Yeah, that was a good one, yeah. If Adi Shanti hasn't asked you to teach, you're no good. And all sensual experience, sensorial experience, you know, turns out to be profoundly fleeting, profoundly evaporative, non-lasting. And though we can have a handful of, you know, let's say peak or intimate moments, we're so insatiable that they're unreliable. I can't remain in an orgiastic state all the time. Some people, you know, might try to. You know, maybe Donald Trump did, you know, go to the USSR and have, you know, various, you know, professional sex workers do golden shower. I mean, you know, why not?
Yeah. Is that what they're saying?
Well, I don't know. You know, Beth finds these interesting things. She mentions to me, you know, to me as an aside. we're really shit out of luck.
Well, what about that couple in Addington who killed that adopted daughter and stuffed her in the attic? Did you hear about that?
I read a little bit. They were local. I didn't realize they were local.
Yeah, they're local.
Uh-huh.
One sick ass story, but yeah.
Yeah, it gets interesting out there.
Yeah.
I mean, if you haven't watched Andy of Mayberry to set your consciousness straight, you can really go awry.
Who knows what was going on in Mayberry?
You know? I don't know. Mayberry might have been a lot like, you know.
Yeah.
Jesus. I don't know. Watchery. Yeah, so, you know, if you go to the root of it, if you can, you know, if one is interested to go to the root of it, which very few people are interested in doing, or very few people even understand or contemplate that there might be a root, you know, to the demonstrative, improvisational nature of present experience. We're so drunk with the idea of continuity of self, right? And the justification of the imagination of my life that we don't even notice that there might be a root, as in a secular, right, of secular / sacred observation as concerns, you know, the root evidence of what we refer to as consciousness or experience. We're so inebriated by the so-called insatiability of it, you know, the flow of it, the impracticality of it, and the way that we feel about it, that we never turn our attention back to look at the, you know, the genesis, right, the evidence, the genesis of so-called present experience. We're always downstream, right? The mind is always downstream. Because it's representational. It's etheric. It operates through, you know, metaphor, meme, and symbol. So anything appearing in mind is always downstream of the, call it, you know, the root demonstration of whatever present experience is. And since we're always downstream, then we suffer, you know, existential panic and apprehension and egotism of a million cuts. And debauchery of a thousand kinds. And we, you know, rarely, let's say, confess just how fundamentally irritable we actually are. Maybe we do that at a 12-step meeting. But even at a 12-step meeting, you know, there's that phase when you're first confessing just how fucked up you are. And that's when you're like the most, you know, authentic. But within one or two meetings, we figure out by, you know, watching everybody else how to move through the so-called recovery strata and we, you know, start becoming inauthentic again, even though we're still suffering. There's something about that, you know, that period of one's, you know, addiction light going off when we're absolutely innocent and powerless. There's something cool there, but we're really good at covering it up as quickly as possible by using the 12 steps. Even though they're designed to heal us, we use them as a clever means to cover up just how existentially vulnerable we actually are. It's hard to remain, you know, undefended. It's hard to remain, you know, authentic, undefended, vulnerable, you know, existentially irritable with all of it, all experiencing, and not know where to turn.
And in a way, that's what's required.
Yes.
To see this. Like, yeah. To really experience it, that's what's required.
Yeah, that's true.
Take off the flak jacket.
Yeah.
You're all kind of mushy and like, fuck.
Yeah.
Got me.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, that, you could say that launches a certain quality of, you know, call it intelligence, which you could refer to as, you know, authenticity. To peer into, call it the texture and geometry of present experience. To be motivated profoundly, you know, to do that, to consider it. Otherwise, it's Mask City. Right? It's Mask City. Yeah. So there's a, you know, let's say there's a quality of this yoga or, you know, style of inquiry or style of looking, which can cultivate or encourage a quality of being perfectly undefended, let's say without having to process one's, you know, local debauchery and disappointments. Right, I don't have to move, I don't necessarily have to move through full disclosure, right? To be undefended. Because the full disclosure, you can wrap up in a neat little ribbon and say, everyone's insane. Okay, everyone is absolutely insane. So you don't need to process it. In some instances, it's, you know, it's worthwhile to do a certain amount of processing so that you can maybe start to come somewhat clean with your own, you know, psyche. But you don't have to do it over and over and over again. You're not going to become, you know, perfected. It's unlikely everyone's going to be able to wear a diaper and pet a peacock and wander around Arunachala and be perfected. You know, it's like peacock consciousness. That happens once in a while on the planet, and that's cool, but those people give spirituality a bad name. Because it means that, you know, ordinary people like us that are not perfected, that will never be perfected, that can't sit, you know, in meditation for, you know, 4 years while vermin are eating our flesh, then, you know, well, you know, I can't get enlightened. I don't have what it takes. And that's the psyche that gets created when you, you know, admire so-called perfected beings. It's a bad idea. It's better if, you know, people like Ramana Maharshi were never discovered by anybody, died quietly at the top of the mountain, picked apart by, you know, whatever raptors are up there.
Well, maybe that's happening all the time and we just don't know who these people are.
Let's hope so. I mean, really, let's hope so. Yeah. So you, you know, we, maybe we develop over, you know, a period of a lifetime and a good deal of suffering and disappointment. How to, release ourselves from ourselves, therefore no longer aiming for any kind of perfection or disclosure or, you know, spiritual amicability. But just fuck it, man. Just completely fuck it. Don't even spend another second thinking about yourself in any context whatsoever. So you can be and are, if I dare say, you know, instantaneously free. Truly instantaneously free. Nothing to process, right? Nothing is resolved. No disclosure, no sobriety, no nothing. You're instantaneously free because present experience is truly unconditioned. I think, you know, just to be a wise ass about it, you have to come to that at some point, no matter how much practice and mindfulness and purification and brown rice and, you know, kombucha you've eaten become sattvic. At some point, you have to come to the radical appreciation that all conditioning is nonsense and useless, that there is no truth that you're going to be able to discover or articulate, and that spontaneously, with no delay, you drop interpretive consciousness. And here this is. Here it is. This is it. This is right now, now right now, now right now, now right now, now right now, unceasingly is, you know, absolute liberation, even though there's no point in calling it that because there's no liberation from anything for anybody in contrast to something else that was not liberation. Because even the idea of liberation, enlightenment, and purification, and resolution, and having glorious spiritual experience is just more, it's just more conceiving. Fuck that. And if we're in anticipation of having, you know, a feeling tone like Peter Brown has, or Pamela Wilson has, or Adyashanti has, or, you know, whomever. If we're interested in cultivating a feeling tone that we imagine some other, you know, admirable or enviable enlightened person is having, we're still absolutely stuck in time and conceiving. Holding out for what? For evidence? Evidence of what? Evidence of the way that you feel? See, if you're looking to evidence, you're fucked because you're not empty. You're still present, presumably dissatisfied in one or a million ways, and then looking to behavioral, textural, sensorial, supersensorial, spiritual evidence to provide you with a framework or a context for how you're doing. Then you, one remains, you know, in the position of a beggar. One remains in the position of being, you know, in time. Codependently occurring. And that must come to an end. That we are habitually codependently occurring must come to an end. It may as well come to an end now. Because that cessation is always absolutely, call it available. It's always on 10. Cessation is always on 10. And if you're in Spinal Tap, it's on 11. Cessation is always on 10 or 11. And there is no bridge. There's no getting from here to there through some kind of evidentiary means or evidence, you know, experience or understanding even. know, understanding is shit. Oh, I understand. Oh, I get it. Oh, I see. Oh, thank you for that instruction. Oh, much clearer now. What? Right? Mind, what we call mind, looks for evidence and justification. It's always on the lookout for context and content and context and content. So it can place itself in some kind of condition or position, spatially, temporally, or otherwise. That's the root restlessness of mind, is that mind is never, you could say, satisfied with, you know, emptiness. Mind is only satisfied with evidence. And that's, you know, that's the root. That's why there is so-called suffering, if there is suffering. The flood of identification goes on effortlessly and unabated. Oh, well. If there's something to do, you're too late. If there's something to understand, you're too late. If there's something to resolve or purify, you're too late. You've already become ensconced in, you know, unreality. By presuming that you're presently in a condition by virtue of some combination of factors and that you would be wise to do something about that condition. What condition am I in? How bad is it? Tell me, Doc, how bad is it?
Pretty bad.
It's pretty bad. Yeah, in your case, it's pretty bad. Stop gluten and sugar. All right, Doc. 10 grams of vitamin C a day. Okay, I can beat this thing. Happiness is no good. Confidence is no good. Security is no good. Nothing's any good. You see the default? You see how, you know, we revert to the myth of individuation and ideation to tell us the condition that we're in and to provide us with, you know, some kind of measure or barometer for how our condition could be, you know, better. Or perhaps ultimately, you know, enlightened. Right? So we first have to occupy a, call it a dynamic, mirthful and mythful frame of reference to place ourselves in a condition of having been born of the nature of time space, you know, with biological imperatives and self-deterministic hegemony, suffering like a motherfucker, that I can fix this. And that's, if that's true, you're too late. If that's true, you're the creature and you're not going to fix this. That creature is going to kick your ass all the way to the grave. So anything Marianne Williamson says is just not going to help. It can't. Because gratitude and surrender are bullshit. There's nothing here. There's nobody here. There's no error. There's no mistake. What gratitude? Fantastic. You know? But you see, on the other side of all of these clever strategies that we deploy or are told about by spiritual persons, we think that there's a takeaway. Right? A success, an amelioration. Fine feeling. There's not. Hon, what you typing over there?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Making a lot of noise.
I use the keyboard that's more quiet.
All right, we'll buy you one.
I have things to say.
So do I, obviously. You know, you start doling out a cosmology like our dear friend Peter Brown doles out a cosmology, and then everyone starts writing the cosmology as if the cosmology is going to take you someplace. Or that if Peter lays down a track, that you have to ask him what he means by that thing, because you think he means something by it, and therefore it, you know, is capable of placing you in an improved spiritual context. Which is bullshit. You know, but you gotta do something with your time. You gotta pretend to have something to talk about. You gotta have clever, you know, mnemonic devices. Like the FSA. You know. Or, I don't know, unpatterned fucking radiant presence or some shit like that. You gotta have a moniker, you know, you gotta have a hook to enroll people in, the fact that they're no good the way they are, because they don't understand things, and they misunderstand things, and they're suffering, and here's why, and if only you would do this, 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 and that, yeah, you'll be much better off. You'll be happy, lighthearted. No, you won't. You're not gonna be happy or lighthearted. There's nothing to be happy and lighthearted about. Why lay down some other kind of imaginary cosmology, whether it's Dzogchen or Western occultism or Kabbalistic Judaism or Taroism, the human, you know, design system? Zero balancing. You know, Traegerism. Everyone's got a fucking cosmology. They think it's going to help you out. You're going to fucking die. Nothing's going to help you out. I mean, that's a relief, I'd hope. Fuck, nothing's going to help me. Cool. I can get down with that. But this, you know, this is the end of existential pride. And we, you know, we don't want that. I want to keep my pride alive by figuring out what to do with myself. I want to keep my pride alive because I have done a lot of suffering and I would like to do a lot less. Oh, you've come to the right place.
You might want to sell that as an Academy Award speech.
Yeah, that's a good one. I know. Everybody's just pulling everybody else's chain. That's what, it's a big chain pull, right? It's a circle jerk. It's a big yank. Oh, I know what reality is. It's radiant presence. Now you're fucked. Oh, is it? And then we create, right, then we create pride and identification by how well we align ourselves with the bozo that's putting out the cosmology. Oh, I get it. Let me tell you how enlightened I am now that I've imbibed your teachings. Oh, rah, rah, sis, boom, bah. I'm so happy for you. It's like everyone's going to the mystics ball. Everybody's wearing like a Ramakrishna mask. We're all at the mystics ball trying to out mystic each other. And then enroll everybody and just how good it is.
I'm going as Papaji.
Yeah, you're
going
to go as Papaji or Muktananda. I get it. Yeah. I'm going as Elmer Fudd. Silly Wabbit. It's like being free from shit is not, it's not on the other side. We always think that being free from shit is on the other side. Meaning here's a pile of suffering, which is me and my pride and my hubris and everything that I'm disappointed in. And I'm going to use the fucking tools that you have given me so graciously on a subscription basis. So that I can get on the other side of this suffering. You're like, no, it never works like that. You never get to the other side. There is no other side. There is no resolution for how you feel. There is no resolution for, you know, all of the experience you've ever had, including the experience you think you're having now. There's no resolution for it. You never get to some other side because there is no other side. That's time. As long as you subscribe to time. You end up walking on some bridge in Alaska that, you know, Sarah, what's her name, built. Just drops you right into the Bay of Fundy. Wherever that bay is. But see, that's how mind works. Mind thinks I'm in a condition. The condition's not so great. I've got a tool set now. I've got mindfulness. I've got, you know, pepper spray, and I've got, you know, whatever I've got. And I'm going to get to the other side of this thing. You know, Peter Brown got to the other side. Paul Hederman got to the other side. There's no other side. You're not going to get to the other side. You're not going to benefit from anybody's teaching. I mean, that's pretty fucked up, but that's great. You're not going to benefit from anybody's cosmology, anybody's teaching, anybody's, you know, encouragement or admonishment to see anything at all. Not because you're just going to imbibe, you know, the feeling tone and the cosmology and the harmonic or the, you know, whatever it is of being around that teacher or that guru or that teaching or this or that. And you're just going to become another dumb fuck beggar in about 2 seconds. Which is fine. I guess you have to, one has to go through endless iterations of being a dumb fuck beggar, probably for decades, before you're like, what? What the fuck was I doing? You know. You can't resolve yourself through the so-called experience of somebody else because the experience of somebody else isn't actually happening. And quite frankly, the experience you think you're having now is not really happening either. Because it's not laying down any tracks. It's not placing you in a condition. It's not binding. Something pops into our head, you know, like an idea or a condition or a suffering or a what if, or the pride of spiritual discovery, you know? It's really easy as a reaction to suffering to suffer from the pride of spiritual discovery. Whoa. We actually think we know what we're craving. We think we know what we're craving by pursuing, you know, spiritual inquiry, radiant presence, traveling lighter, noting the path of the bird. We think we're actually, you know, en route. We're en route. You're not. Cosmology of self comes pouring in so fast with such, you know, incessant insatiability that we find ourselves the product of an incredible matrix, you know, or net of identification and implication. Instantaneously, bam, you're the product of infinity. And, you know, face it, irritated. God, infinity is so irritating. What's the real craving? You know, that you could say, what if you could answer that question or play around with it? What's the real craving? Right. That's where you separate the those that are seeking entertainment from those that are writhing with the heat or writhing with the tapas of freedom. What's the craving? Security, continuity, understanding, good feeling, invulnerability, right? Secrets of the universe. What's the craving? What do we imagine the resolution of our, you know, life and spiritual search is supposed to be? What is it supposed to feel like? And if you can find an object on the other side of that equation, then you're in it for the entertainment. If you can find an object as an answer to what's the real craving, then you're in this for the entertainment. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's as much fun as anything. No problem. But if you can't find an object in answer to that question, well, now you're onto something. Now you've got some, call it some really good ruination as a suppository.
What do you mean by can't find an object? What do you mean by object?
So like right now, do you have the slightest anticipation for anything at all? Right now.
You mean anything from this call?
Anything. Anything. You see how surreptitiously, right, something creeps in that places one's experience in some kind of context. Right? Spatially or sensually, imaginarily. That's what I mean by finding an object. You can place yourself in some kind of a context. And then if you find, you know, let's say a lifelong, you know, theme of some kind of disenchantment, then you're looking for another object, which is the resolution of that disenchantment. So, for fun, I would say that if there is such a thing as freedom, and there doesn't matter really if there is or there isn't, and who gives a fuck anyway, but if there were, you could clumsily, you know, articulate that as being absolutely object-free presently. You're not in anticipation. You're not using knowledge of prior experience to frame yourself or to project it into a future.
Or if there is something and you see that it's just another, you know, storm coming through for a second, or whatever. You know what I'm saying? If you see that that's just desire coming through and leaving, whatever.
I hear you.
Then it's, I think it's the same freedom too. Cause I mean, things, for me anyway, things come, oh, I should do this, I want to do this or whatever, but I.
Sure.
Also, it's like, yeah, it's sure. Yeah, whatever. You just go by. You know?
Yeah. It's a lovely way to articulate it, but if I held you to it, I'm sure you would agree that it's not really true the way you framed it.
Well, go on.
Yeah, because you can frame, let's say, the movement of, you know, thoughts passing through, and let's call it a response of a lucid kind of Aikido that doesn't get hung up on, you know, on a thought or an expectation or a presumption or a projection of any kind.
Right.
But and even though that's a nice way to put it, that's not really what's happening. Because your freedom from anything that's arising as an object in mind is absolutely spontaneous and unconditional. There's no resolution. You're not actually finding, call it a behavioral satisfaction on the other side of it. You know what I mean? Let's say, not that it's necessary, but absolute negation is not processing anything. It's not making nice with the mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm lost.
Well, again, the way that you articulated a lovely way of dealing with, let's just say, distracting thoughts is a great way to put it. But I'm drawing you out by suggesting that's not really what's happening. That's just a way to frame it. What's actually happening if you become unhinged from the implication of thinking is an impersonal and, you know, absolutely spontaneous, effortless event. It's not Bruce processing thoughts in a more palatable manner. Does that make sense? I mean, it's let's just say it's radical evaporation.
It's just the mind's gonna do what it's gonna do. You know, if a desire, oh, I should get this done, and then I'll do this or whatever, if that comes through, it's, yes, you know.
Yeah.
Can't deny it. Oh, it's not happening because,
right,
I'm.
That's right. There's no reason to, let's say, outthink yourself.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, she's coming through, but when it doesn't matter anymore,
yeah,
like seeing that it's just a bunch of, you know what I mean? I mean,
yes, but you see, yes, I hear you, and it's always interesting the way that we characterize stuff, because even suggesting when it doesn't mean anything anymore, right?
Right.
Because of the way that language operates and, call it, anthropomorphization operates, it feels like, you know, there's someone here to whom things don't matter anymore. Right? There's an illusion of
that comes and goes. It's, you can't really pin it down, but there's an illusion of me that comes and goes. I mean,
maybe
not for you. Maybe.
Well, no, I'm just saying that there's only the illusion of coming and going because you just said there was. There's not actually any illusion of anything.
Yeah, it's only in the moment that you try to And the only reason that comes up to try to put it in some kind of framework is because listening to you bring up these ideas.
Yeah.
If you didn't bring up these ideas, it'd be no illusion of a framework.
Hey, that's good. Yeah, for sure. Blame it on me. I'm good. Yeah. Leif, you're in stereo. We can see you twice.
Yeah, I'm going to say, we see you twice.
Sorry, I'm just trying to do something.
Fucking guy is just like his guru. He bilocates and then he brags about it on Zoom.
Which one should we talk to?
There's the guy inside and there's the guy on the roof.
Well, maybe they're twins or something.
Long lost twin.
I don't know.
Yeah. This is the, this is how we enter into, call it functional heresy from moment to moment. By framing or articulating experience through, representational, form or format. And that means we're just doing that, improvisationally and at present, which it doesn't really mean anything, thankfully. Because we're always, you could say, without effort, we're appearing as, evaporative neg entropy. It's like you're nothing at all until you, insist that you're something. That's what we're, you could say the so-called average person is really uncomfortable with. The intimacy with the discovery that we are, that this is nothing at all. It so frightens and terrifies us and makes us feel uncomfortable that we just keep filling it up and filling it up and filling it up and filling it up with, one cosmology after another, including, of course, psychiatric and spiritual cosmologies and whatever. Yeah. As if the fact that Jesus lived, walked on water, healed the sick, wouldn't throw a stone and, got a spear in his chest, that should set the stage for, the rest of humanity to follow that example somehow. Well, what? And that's how these, profound superstitions, you could say arise, and how they incarcerate us rather than free us, because cosmologies can only be incarcerating. What does it feel like if there is evaporation of purpose? If the motive to respond to or ameliorate or end suffering just falls absolutely away. If I'm not in anticipation of anything at all, I'm not trying to perfect my experience through the lens of, Peter Brown or whomever. And I love everybody, of course. I love everybody. I'm a people person.
Jeffrey, it's time to grow up.
Yeah, I hear you. I've been listening to that voice a long, long time.
Was that Nan?
That was, she was channeling my mom.
Wow, that was
pretty
good.
That's what I said.
You're me a little.
Just tell her to get back in bed.
Yeah, really. Why don't you jump down the stairs and try to collect the mail?
Oh, Marty.
Makes you cringe, doesn't it? You know, investment in our, you know, in our story, in our experience, two steps forward, one step back. Investment in the, you know, lovely spiritual experiences we've had along the way, on the cushion, on retreat, you know, reading a good book, eating some really sweet watermelon on a hot summer day. You see, we're you could say bound by our own making. We're bound by our own doing, by our own sentimentality. And so this arises, you know, spontaneously, and then we're convinced that we have something to resolve and something to fix, something that for sure could turn out better if I would, you know, do more puja.
Too funny.
Phew, fuck. There's always that, you know, incredible nagging sense of otherness, right? God as otherness, Hanuman as otherness, right? Evil as otherness, right? The gifts from the Divine Mother that I have not yet earned as otherness, right? Relying on the good graces of the Master, living or departed, as otherness. I mean, we're so profoundly neurotic because we buy into this myth of otherness, and that otherness has accomplished something or arrived in a place that knows more than us, that feels more than us, that can heal, that can do things that we can't do. So we are beholden to this myth of otherness. So our autonomy of our own experience is felt as being, you know, insufficient. I am insufficient. I'm a creature. I'm separate. I'm temporal. I'm derived. I'm the outcome of something. You know, I might have self-deterministic powers. And then there's just that nagging, you know, existential irritability of otherness looming over my head all the time. Someone or something that's higher than me, better than me, knows more than me, has been around longer than I have, that has something to impart. And this, you know, this crescendo of otherness reinforces the fundamental unsatisfactoriness of being a creature.
Yeah.
And that's how you could say we enroll over and over again in the undignifying presumption of, you know, separative existence. How many demonstrations must I do to clear the deck?
Well, Jeff, so look at the limitations on the human being, you know. Mortality, presumed. Groundlessness, doesn't know what's happening, never did. Insatiable desire, get that.
Craving, yeah.
Insatiable craving, you never get enough no matter how much you get. Like those three defects in human, let's say, existence, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
You're kind of doomed no matter what.
Well, yeah, if we're interpreting, let's say, that lovely, nice thin Bible that you just wrote, if we're interpreting things in that way, then yeah, you've got a good doom program going down.
Yeah.
But not that any of those things are true.
Well, yeah. But they appear, you know, I mean that they, I guess you could say, let's see, working backwards, maybe the desire that can't be satisfied, that's something that seems to be built in. You
know, well, creation, right? Creation or sensuality or experiencing could be equated with insatiable desire.
Yeah.
Right? All of experience is the manifestation of insatiable desire.
Yeah, right.
But that doesn't mean it has to be a problem.
No, of course. But I mean, it's a problem insofar as us, let's say us or people trying to, let's say, stabilize themselves or get someplace with the program. I mean, they're just faced with this huge roadblock constantly.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the dilemma of self-assigning as a creature, having to confront this incredible display of, you know, weird, unresolvable bottomlessness that seems to be punctuated by insatiable craving, you know, and dukkha.
Yeah, and it seems also to be time limited in a certain way. I mean, that the body's going to die, even though that's a kind of it's a...
Well, we suffer in any given day by, let's say, the imagination of death, but we also suffer in a given day by the imagination of, you know, individuated durability. We have too much time on our hands.
Well, that's a good one.
Right? Yeah. I suffer because there's too much time. There's too much unknown. There's too much anticipatory insecurity. I don't know what my future will hold. I don't know which way to turn or what decision to make.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's another kind of suffering, which is, you know, long before I'm like, oh, I'm going to die. It's like, fuck, I'm alive.
Yeah. Granted. Right. Yeah. That's another problem.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not surprised that people just go for some sort of solution under these circumstances.
Well, anyone that's not aiming for a solution is, who are they?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I like, you know, I steer away from people that aren't aiming for a solution. They're like, they scare the shit out of me. You know, it's like the POTUS E in the cabinet.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, the cosmology, you know, of body, of self, of time, of space, of death, of, you know, insatiable craving, of insatiable wonder. It's like, I can't handle it. It's too much information.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well put.
Yeah, TMI.
Yeah.
Please, less.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's remarkable, right? I mean, we're not gonna avoid the, let's say, the pressure of experiencing, unless, of course, we suicide, and we don't even know if that is, you know, a worthwhile remedy.
Right.
So here's the pressure of present experience. You know, including the, you know, the implication of individuation, of time, of space, of causality, of doing things right, of doing things wrong, of optimizing one's, you know, experience and sensitivity and, you know, sensorial indulgences.
Yeah.
You know, putting enough money away for my retirement, for, you know, being sick or infirm or alone. God, wolf. Wow.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's an orgy of insecurity.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, why do we use the various tools at our disposal to try to mitigate and medicate this orgy of insecurity? What a fucking loop.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm surprised that more people are not driven to the meditation cushion. How do they manage to get through a fucking day without, you know?
Right.
Without refuge.
Good point.
How does anybody get through a fucking day without refuge?
Yeah.
Facebook.
There's plenty of refuge. There's shopping, there's alcohol, there's activity, there's yep. money, there's a million and one refuges.
If you're the activity manager for an assisted living facility, I want to go there.
Okay, I'll sign you up.
All right, because I'm going to go shopping and I'm going to drink. I'm going to watch TV. Maybe I'll have sex with another inmate. Who knows? This is what I call living. It's just a riot. Experiencing is riotous.
Yeah.
And, you know, just as remarkable as the tsunami of implication, right, steals our attention away. With just as remarkable an ease, a cessation is exactly at hand. And there's no, you could say, real quarrel or boundary field between being whisked away by the riotous insatiability of experiencing or being privy to effortless cessation.
Well, are you referring to cessation, are you referring to sort of loss of belief, let's say, when you say effortless cessation?
You see, if we start to frame effortless cessation through the human meme, then naturally we can find all kinds of conditional pluses and minuses, right, that right. relate to human behavior. And a lot of books do that, right? Yeah, but what if effortless cessation, did not have to answer to, right, human conditioning at all? Then you wouldn't even use the word belief, would you?
No.
Fuck it. Belief? Excuse me? You mean as if in a moment ago I believed shit and now I don't believe things? No, that, I would say that's ridiculous. Right? So any way that we might frame what we might be clumsily referring to as effortless cessation, we certainly can't frame it through human behavioral memes because those are too, shallow anyway.
So let's say seeing experience for what it is, or on a more primal level.
Yeah, but that, right, but
that's still in the meme category,
isn't it? Doesn't it suggest process?
Yeah,
doesn't it? Right, it suggests process, or call it a quality of referring to the mythical apparitional nature of present experience. Don't even bother to see through this shit.
Right.
Right?
So what word would you put on it then?
Wow. Mike Pence.
Say again?
The president, vice president-elect. I mean, just to be absurd, what word would you put on anything? Right? Effortless cessation, which is the same ground of being as a tsunami of apprehension, does not have a word, does not have a genesis, does not have any implication.
Well, yeah, I want effortless cessation for sure, but how to do that?
How to do what?
How to inhabit that, let's say.
What condition do you think you're in?
The ultimate condition. I mean, I have to be.
Well then, effortless cessation is yours. Bada boom. That was easy. Pay the bursar on the way out.
Oh, that's okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, are you in a condition? And if you've convinced yourself somehow that you're in a condition, then effortless cessation looks like some other kind of good condition, or the resolution of the condition that I think, you think, anyone thinks they're in.
Right.
You're not in a condition, and therefore you do not need it to be resolved.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean it's not going to feel like shit.
That's its business. You see, we only aspire to freedom from the imaginary presumption that this, what I am experiencing now, is not freedom.
That's right. It's not the ultimate.
Yeah, that's right. If you've convinced yourself, and we're all very good at it, so, you know, we're not singling anybody out. If I've convinced myself that somehow my present experience is less than the ultimate, what's going to save me? Nothing. Nothing can save me.
Right.
That's why I was, you know, fooling around with the idea that there is no resolution for anything. Because you're not in a condition. So if you are aiming or seeking for some kind of resolution, no matter how lofty it may be, you're never, never, ever, never, like never as in ever, ever, never going to find it.
Yeah.
Because there is no resolution, because nothing ever happened in the first place. It's like looking, if we look at the spontaneously arising myth of ideation or myth of individuation, then we can see, that's not true. But even saying it that way is saying too much. One is not even sufficiently in the game to even say it's not true. If you found something that's not true, it's too late. It's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you're like, huh? True? Not true?
You're not even in it. You're not even in it. Yeah.
You're not in it. You're just not in it.
But it's not going to, like Bruce was saying, it's not necessarily going to feel any better.
That's a hypothetical, isn't it? Right? Aren't you imagining a future where you can say it's not going to feel any better?
True.
Okay, so you've created now a hypothetical condition that places you once again in some kind of a framework about how, whether things are going to feel a certain way or not, and that that matters.
Well, I'm talking about the present moment.
How can you? It's already gone. You see, in order to even speak about a so-called present moment, you have to presume there is one. You have to presume you're experiencing one. And therefore, you have, you know, a magical power and skill to opine or comment upon it. Which places you, again, superficially, subtly, back in the realm of a creature.
Yeah.
Right, but if that happens, that happens.
No quarrel. If it happens, it happens. But even if it happens, it happens is not true. Because what are you referring to? Something that has happened or is happening now or will happen? What's happening? It?
Yeah, happening sort of gets non-existent too.
Fuck happening.
Yeah.
How free do you want to be? Do we want to keep coming up with clever metaphors and excuses for the way things feel or how they should feel or whether it's happening or not happening or not? You tell me what's happening.
Yeah, that's a mug's game. That's going back into it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not suggesting that one shouldn't do that. It's just what where's the emphasis, right? Because consciousness, if there is any, is always remarkably present, right? Remarkably unadorned, remarkably not the consequence of anything at all. And if you or me or anyone wants to assign some kind of, you know, conclusion or a metaphor to it, knock yourself out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's remarkably in your face.
Yes. Yeah, so there's a quality of intimacy that this is so remarkably in one's face. You're like, fuck me, I can't say anything about this. I'm done. I don't got any one-liners left. I can't convince myself of anything. So by having this kind of clumsy conversation, we're drawing out what the implication of, call it spontaneous, effortless cessation is.
Yeah, good.
It's just this.
Yeah.
But there's no idea in sight.
Right.
There's no anticipation of the next moment or whether that moment's going to feel a certain way, satisfactorily or otherwise.
Yeah.
This is so improvisational, it's like, I give up.
Right.
Hands off the steering wheel.
It's like seeing this without the seeing.
Yes.
Without the word seeing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even the seeing is like, you know, even the most subtle of seeing has implication.
Yeah. Yeah. Seeing without seeing. Without the seeing. Without the seeing element.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, It's way better than we are at being able to turn it into a metaphorical representation.
Yeah, for sure.
Whatever you got, poetically or otherwise, whether you're Rumi or, you know, somebody else.
Yeah.
It's a pile of shit.
Yeah, compared to it, let's say.
Yeah. I mean, actual experience, if there were such a thing, is absolutely unadorned and non-dual, with no effort on your part to understand a fucking thing.
Yeah.
You don't even have to say I am that.
Right. It's an autonomous happening. And as we were saying the other day, an autonomous illumination.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. An autonomous, inclusive illumination, about which anything at all can be spoken or said, and they all turn out to be untrue. But you can see, but you can see how quickly one identifies with the clever memes that show up in one's mind to, right, lay down a track.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a meme ladder for sure.
Yes.
That's the way I'm understanding it.
Yeah.
So to speak, you know.
Yeah. Right. What condition am I in? Let's see. Right? I can go through my calendar, my emotional experience, my physical experience, my apprehension, my disappointment in myself, my disappointment in everybody else. Something I'm looking forward to, right? You know, a spiritual one-liner.
Yeah.
Like, jeez, shut the fuck up.
I know. I was looking the other morning when I woke up. There was such a strong sense of self-loathing. You know.
I love that.
What the fuck is that?
That's really
seductive, you know. Oh, fuck, I've completely wasted my time here on the earth.
Yep.
I haven't got anywhere. I don't even do any puja. I don't do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Half-baked about everything. My health is going, it's just like I don't do it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone would call that, you know, an angelic visitation.
Yeah, very strong angelic visitation.
It was a very strong angelic visitation.
Yeah. That's how you know the strength of an angel.
That's right. Yeah, I don't remember the last time I convinced myself I was this useless. must be an angel.
Well, it's actually loathing, you know.
Yeah.
It's not just useless.
But it's
loathing.
But there's profitability in the loathing.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
There's a person lurking in the woodpile.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Even the loathing has a bottom line.
Yeah, yeah, right, for sure.
Yeah. Too funny. Yeah. Well, you know, when you've made a certain degree of spiritual advancement, you just do that kind of stuff for fun.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, right.
you've become so boorishly sanguine that just for fun, you're going to have a major self-loathing pity party.
Yeah. Like, how does this liqueur of self-loathing taste?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Like the practice of advanced, monks, Dzogchen monks, like, let's try this one.
Yeah, right. That's right. What an interesting aroma that suffering has.
So long lasting.
Yeah, you can't even get any mileage out of it. It won't last. Ode to loathing.
I was just going to say that.
You what?
You just took that right out of my mouth.
I apologize.
Ode to loathing, I like it.
Ode to loathing. You can get it at Macy's before they close all those stores.
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't notice it was there at some point, but then when I did notice it was there, I was pretty shocked at the strength of it, you know?
Oh, yeah, what fun. I mean, what else is there to do, really, except be kicked around by consciousness 24/7? Have you ever found anything else?
No. Better learn to enjoy it now.
May as well. All that you're going to find is 1,000 forms of despair and self-loathing. May as well start enjoying it.
Fifty Shades of Self-Loathing.
I didn't hear that.
Oh, I said 50 Shades of Self-Loathing.
50 Shades of Self-Loathing.
I like it.
Yeah, break out the short whip. See, what's so funny, we become so idealized, you know, you could say we become kind of encrusted by former suffering that we've put up such a body or bounty of resistance, you know, that we don't have any, it's like we've run out of the ability to charmingly endure our own suffering.
Yeah.
We've become, you know, too, can I say too resolute?
Yeah, our defenses have got worn down.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's when it starts to smell like freedom. When our defenses are worn down, no matter what this throws at us, it's like, psst, 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 psst.
Well, it was sort of highlighted the other day when I was talking to Shrima, the great Hindu woman sage, and when I went up to have her darshan, she said, Lakshman, you're too fat.
There you go. You go to see a great saint for a little bit of spiritual encouragement, then all you get is that.
I know. I can't do anything about it, Ma. I mean, I've tried. I just can't. Besides, leave me alone. I'm 71 years old. Fucking leave me alone.
Really? I am. Look, I'm not going to improve. I appreciate the cordial feedback, but it's not going to work.
If it would only work, I'd be a lot more relaxed, but I know it won't work.
Yeah. This is the funny thing, you know, when we look at craving or insatiability or irresolvability as concerns the imagination of our spiritual state, we manufacture all kinds of evidence to place ourselves in some kind of condition.
Yeah.
And having done so, now we are primed to enter into, you know, yet another codependent relationship with whomever that promises us amelioration from our symptoms.
Good point. Yeah.
And that, you know, cycle, if you will never work.
Right. Well, that just have to get along the list of other things that won't work.
That's right. We're going to add that to the list of nothing works.
Right. Welcome to Nothing Works.
That's right.
I'll take mantra for 10.
That's right. Yeah. Repeating silly tones in hopes of being more peaceful. What is mantra? That's right. Nothing works for 200, Alex.
Right. We even have the little squares, like Hollywood squares.
That's right. We're Hollywood squares, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll take $1,000, you know.
You're in the Paul Lynn spot, but yeah. From my end, at least.
Really?
That's right.
I can't even see my thing here unless I look at it, and every time I do, it doesn't look very good. I had to dim it.
Yeah.
It's important to have the right lighting.
The last thing I want is to be reminded of my condition.
Yeah, it looks bad to me.
freedom from, you know, that's the first sign of a serious dilemma. Wanting freedom from. That freedom is somehow, you know, dependent on the presence or absence of, you know, circumstances.
Yeah, that's obviously a mug's game, I've learned.
you know, to be relieved of the inertia of spiritual or behavioral strategy is profound.
Yeah. To be comfortable with being relieved of it is another good one.
Well, we certainly got our money's worth out of this conversation.
Yeah. A lot of fun. Thank you, Jeff.
Pleasure is all mine, of course. What did they used to say in that cop show? Be careful out there.
Right.
Hillside Blues, right?
Hill Street Blues.
Hill Street.
Yeah.
Hill Street Blues.
Yeah.
Be careful out there.
Let's be careful out there.
Yeah. Well, thanks for stopping by. We'll see you all again all soon.
Okay, great.
Okay, good.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
See you later.
Thanks.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye-bye.